The Good Times Everton podcast with Kevin Melling and Liam Knight, brewing the Toffees since 1995.
Liam, we're hurtling towards Christmas, aren't we? And unlike the current day Everton team, our wheels are in no danger of falling off.
I mean, they are hurtling as well, just in a very different direction to the podcast, because we are, as you say, we seem to be going from strength to strength, whilst Everton seem to be going from weakness to weakness as we record now. But we've got a lot to look forward to, haven't we? By the time this goes out, we'll have had the inaugural Good Times festive quiz, which is follow-up to the first Good Times quiz earlier this year.
Yeah, so the second quiz is in the bag, and that's two wins this season, which is equal to Ebenezer Dyche's Everton side. But yeah, an escape from current day Everton is kind of what this podcast has become. We have got a guest today that I think we were a little bit surprised when he agreed to join us, but maybe we shouldn't have been.
A famous Evertonian, I'm sure all our listeners are more than familiar with, is joining us today. We're very kindly being joined by Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester, who is, as you all know, a big Evertonian, and he's agreed to give us a bit of time. So this is a bit of a departure from our usual episodes, but we thought we'd make an exception because he's someone who is admired by a lot of Evertonians for a number of reasons. He's someone who's very much fought the club's corner in light of recent humiliations with the points deductions and the issues with the regulator that is being mooted. He's really fought the club's corner against the Premier League in the past 18 months, so he's a brilliant guest to have him. I think we're both very excited to speak to him, aren't we, Kev?
I feel a little bit nervous. I don't know why. Because, like, end of the day, he's just another fella, isn't he?
Yeah. I'm nervous that he might drop the C-bomb. Just be like, who's this?
Well, let's talk about another C-bomb then. We're going to watch the Muppets Christmas Carol on at the Philharmonic. A little matinee show, and so we did it a couple of years ago for It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, on the day?
On Christmas Eve.
Boss.
Sorry, I thought I said that, but yeah, Christmas Eve morning. Yeah, I loved it when we went to It's a Wonderful Life, but the show and that again, but I was like, no, we'll do something different. But yeah, I got the tickets when, because we went to see Ben Elton a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
At the film on it. And I went to pick my tickets up and noticed that they were doing them up as Christmas Carol. So I bought the tickets there, and then later on we were going outside. Gemma was having a vape, and one of the stewards was like, make sure you got your tickets to come back in. So I was like, bet you I could get in with me Muppets ticket. So I just did. I just showed him my Muppets tickets on the way back in, and he just went, yeah, sorry, mate, go ahead. So little tip there for anyone that fancies bunking into a show at the Phil, it's worth a try. You might not get a seat once you get in there, like, but
yeah.
What's your favourite Christmas film? Have you seen any?
We started watching Die Hard the other night. I don't know if it is a Christmas film.
It is a Christmas film.
I can see both sides of it.
I don't understand the side that says it's not.
Yeah, I see both sides of it. I do just think that it's the most festive killings. Ellis, his death is like, I've never seen someone go out the way in a film to earn a death so much. Like, he really puts the hours in for it, doesn't he?
It is Christmas, though, because it's set on Christmas Eve at a Christmas Eve party.
That's true. I think Die Hard 2 is maybe more Christmassy. Is that because of the snow?
Yeah, possibly.
You know what I mean? I think the aesthetic of Die Hard 2 is more Christmassy.
Yeah, it's difficult to think about Christmas when it's like set in LA. Yeah, we watched that Surviving Christmas that Brian told us about last night.
It was good.
No, it wasn't good, no. It was nice to see James Gandolfini. Like, he's just always, he's always brilliant. Ben Affleck was terrible. Like, so it's made in 2004, and Ben's just like going through the motions, doesn't cover it. So yeah, this interview will be out on the Blue Room 3 days earlier, then you can find it on the Good Times feed, where it'll also be up as well.
Yeah.
So give us a follow at Good Times EFC Pod.
Yeah, you can find us on Instagram and on X, formerly known as Twitter. We've not made the move over to Blue Sky yet, but that might be something that happens at some point. I'm not sure.
I don't know. Can you be asked?
We've got a lot of effort. It's a lot of effort. As ever, though, this episode is brought to you in association with the official boozer of the Good Times podcast, which is the Excelsior in Liverpool.
Six Cascales and Erdinger on draft. Proper blue pub with some of the best staff in town. They've got the weekly Tuesday night pub quiz with a £40 bar tab and the occasional Good Times Everton podcast quiz as well.
Yeah, and don't forget, Kev, as well, for those of you listening over the festive season, they hire out the back room for free, don't they?
They've got a dartboard as well, which is like as Christmassy as it gets.
Yeah. Kev's hoping to hit a double top on there, but he hasn't done it yet.
No, just a lager top for me last time. Thanks very much for joining us, Andy. First question from me, and it's a bit of a pertinent one after the third round cup draw earlier this week. Is there any news on the campaign to bring back the FA Cup replays?
Well, I was working hard with Fair Game on that. It was like another thing, wasn't it, where the kind of the games authorities just seem to get it so wrong, don't they? And look at all these international, they're going about congested calendar. All these bloody international weekends we've had to sort of have. I don't see congested calendar. There is a measure in the Football Governance Bill, like a proposal to say that where there's any changes to competitions, they'd have to consult with the regulator and supporters. So it's kind of retrospective, Kevin, I think is the honest answer. And yeah, a real shame, isn't it, when you think of the third round replays at Goodison over the years, big nights under the lights. It's like they don't know the value of their own competition at times, isn't it?
No, we said this in our last episode. We looked at 2008-09 and that great cup run we had. It only struck us then, I think, that the Goslin derby would never have happened current day because, let's face it, we would have just got knocked out on penalties at
Yeah,
Anfield.
no way we win that, is there?
True, true that.
But I felt sorry for the likes of Tamworth watching the cup draw last night because it was great for them to get Tottenham at home.
Yeah, but then a replay.
Yeah, there's no chance of that. So it's nice for them to maybe
Yeah.
get a TV tie, but.
I was at Rochdale, Newcastle. I think it was literally on the eve of the pandemic. It was January 2020. And they got a draw, and they went up to St James's Park, and the club said to me, because they hit difficulties recently, Rochdale, you might remember. They just said that saved us, that replay. And again, it's just the way the game is, isn't it? It's not a game of equals, is it? The authorities have got clubs in a ranking, haven't they? And if they don't see the smaller you get, they just don't see you, do they? Not running the game for them, are they? They're running it for others, which is frustrating to say the least.
No, it is, and you've done a lot of good work supporting Everton in the past 18 months, Andy. Particularly stand up to the Premier League in light of the rather draconian points deduction. How did you find that in terms of when you were obviously pushing back into the Premier League? Were you able to speak with them much, or was it just a case of you felt like your concerns were falling on deaf ears in terms of the particularly the severity of the sanctions against Everton?
Oh, it was complete breakdown, Liam. Let's just be clear. Let's have it straight. They tried to take our football club out, didn't they? They tried basically to kill us, and there was early on. It was clear to me no conversation to be had. It had to be fought publicly. I have been on the record of saying I did an interview on the pitch at the United game. When the first big protest was coming. It was never broadcast, and it was never broadcast, I understand, because Premier League put pressure on Sky and they turned the process of the crowd down. That was the tone, wasn't it, that we were going into. And bear in mind, I have got long experience of regulatory systems in terms, I'm not just bigging myself up there, I just have, because I've been a minister, I've been around and worked with regulators of all kinds. In our instance, for them to cobble together some rules and a schedule that they sent to the independent panel, and that the independent panel said, well, we can't receive this because it's not the process that we've set out and been asked to consider, therefore we're sending it back. I mean, that quite blatantly was an abusive process, and yet no one called them out. And this is the thing about the Premier League. They can manipulate the media. They can play, they play all of that into the way that they work, don't they? And aren't sufficiently held to account. And I just thought, well, it's a time, because there is an existential threat to our football club, to Everton Football Club, and that's why I'm going to fight it in the way that I did. But all of it, in my view, needed to be flushed out. And I'm proud actually of our fab, you know, the fan advisors. I think they've been brilliant, to be honest, as well. It's not, you know, they were the ones really doing the work. I was just doing what I could. But, you know, Dave Kelly and everybody at the fab, absolutely brilliant. And they've now been bringing through potential amendments to the Football Governance Bill, one being that the independent regulator would be able to intervene to ensure the correct process around profit and sustainability rules. And, you know, I call it the Everton clause, but I think we really get behind that in the new year. You know, this legislation needs to be changed in respect of what they tried to do to us so that they can never, ever do it to somebody else in the future. I do think we should all get behind that in the new year.
What's it been like, Andy, as in your position as mayor of Greater Manchester? What's it like being in a football hotbed like that, where you're a huge supporter and a, you know, a well-known supporter of a team that's not from that region? Because you like.
You might think it'd be quite a divisive sort of position to find yourself in, but it's actually incredibly unifying, Kev, to be honest with you, because I am, you know, the mayor of a city region where every single person here wants Liverpool Football Club never to win another game, and I, you know, we're all totally aligned, aren't we? So, you know, we have no problem really. I work with both clubs. It's just, in many ways, joking aside, a sort of privilege really to work in a city that has two football clubs of their stature. You know, whether people like it or not, they're huge, aren't they, in terms of their reach. And particularly at the moment, working with United potentially on, you know, either refurbished or rebuilt Old Trafford. You know, as a football person, I consider that a privilege. And actually, I celebrate the links between Everton and the two Manchester clubs. You know, you think of Joe Royle and Peter Reid on the City side of Manchester. I've always sort of felt sort of quite close attachment between Everton and Manchester United in terms of culture and kind of social background. And I had the privilege of going to Munich last year for the get the 65th, wasn't it? 65th anniversary of the crash. And I was kind of reminding people when I was there how my dad, Evertonian to his core, but working in Manchester in the late 50s, went to the first game at Old Trafford out of respect for United and the young team that they had. And I think it's just modern football doesn't sort of quite tick like that anymore, does it? There was a sort of more mutual kind of understanding, respect, wasn't there? And, you know, I think we could probably all of us benefit from a bit more of that. When you see the tragedy chanting and stuff, you just despair, don't you, of some of the behaviour at modern football? I do anyway.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, isn't it? And I never really understood the whole Liverpool Manchester rivalry as cities, because there seems to be so much more that we have in common and divides us, you know. And maybe that's because it's possibly more of a Liverpool FC v Man United thing.
Well, I don't know though. It's like it's your neighbours, isn't it? It's always the rivalry is great. So look at Everton and Liverpool, but then you extend it out. You know, it's the Northwest neighbours, isn't it? And there's always going to be intense, isn't it? You know, it's never going to be very different. I don't think. But you know, I can remember going to a Milk Cup replay away. You'll be too young, you two, to know about this, but we were away at Main Road in I think it must have been May 1984, having been cheated by a Sooners handball on the line, and we had to go back for the replay to Main Road. So you can imagine, I think, what a test that was, the whole of Liverpool going into Manchester that night. That was certainly a slight for your older listeners to the podcast, a slightly tasty occasion, I think.
It's those cup replays, isn't it? That's terrible. Should get rid of
Yeah,
them.
get rid of the cup replays, definitely. Yeah, yeah,
Maybe the FA know something.
definitely. And it's mad, isn't it? Because that you talk about that season, but fortunately, I suppose there was a silver lining that season because Everton go on to win the FA Cup, don't they? After the disappointments in the Milk Cup, as you probably know, our podcast kind of picks since the last FA Cup win, which has not been it's been far too long for most Evertonians, I'm sure we'd agree. One thing I did notice, Andy, when I've kind of been doing a bit of research for this, I know that one of the games you've highlighted as one of your favourites as an Evertonian was the game against Tottenham at Leeds in 1995. I think I'm not going to pretend that any game in the time since then has surpassed that game or even matched it, but in the past 30 years, because that's kind of the folks we're at, is there a game or that a moment that's kind of really stood out to you that you kind of hark back to and think, oh, I really enjoyed that. I was proud to be an Evertonian, or that's something that you think of fondly?
Well, certainly that game, Liam, because it just stands out to me as a game where we watched it without the kind of nerve shredding stuff. You know, it was a, you know, half time. I think we were 1-0 up. Matt Jackson got a header, and we had three sides of the ground, so that was helping, and we felt like we were in control of the thing. And then, you know, usual stuff. But then going 2-0 up, two, yeah. But then all of a sudden, just to take control of an FA Cup semi-final, like even in our really, you know, successful days, I don't think we ever did that. You know, there was the late winner at Highbury. I was at that one. Then at Villa Park, we nearly went out, actually. Luton at Villa Park, you know, and Sheedy's sort of bounce, bobbling free kick just creeps in. And that was like that. I think that was in injury time, you know. And so, you know, looking back to FA Cup, you know, even in our peak, we didn't really boss those FA Cup semi-finals. But that one we did. And it was just joyous as well. You know, Amakachi coming through, you know, with some of the issues that we'd had around racism in Everton in the past, you know, the kind of the first black player of our generation, you know, coming through and sort of breaking through barriers and doing it with a massive smile on his face. Yeah, I really look back at that day as a sort of, you know, Joe Royal gloating on the media afterwards saying that, you know, dream final, dream on, I think he said, because it was all about, you know, supposedly United versus Spurs. And yeah, it was that one really, because it was like an Everton I'd never, ever seen before. I've never seen since.
No, definitely. I think another one that sticks
in my mind is the one straight after the 20th anniversary of Hillsborough, actually, when I'd been as culture secretary to the anniversary a few days before. And then we go down to Wembley to play United in the 2009 semi-final. That one sticks in my mind. You know, when you talk about things that make you proud, it was the way in which the club were all, you know, all Evertonians were behind the justice campaign as well. And, you know, at that moment, I think that was, you know, for me anyway, a very memorable moment, because I've got the Daily Mirror of that Monday on the front page of it on my wall at home. It's basically, there's a headline that says justice at last, because we got the Home Office to reopen the files and it was reported that day. And on top of it, there's the entire Everton team running towards the away end. It's a good front page.
That sounds very good. I hope they cut out the bit where Phil Neville's not smiling, because that was in our latest episode, the cover of it, where all the other players are ecstatic. But yeah, it was. I suppose that was. It was a great day, that, but unfortunately, it was a bit of a missed opportunity under David Moyes, wasn't it? A lot of times passing David Moyes left. How did you, when you look back, do you look back fondly on his Everton reign and his Everton sides?
Yeah, I remember feeling really sort of crestfallen on the day that David left. I do, because I just think if you go back to the Moyes era, we can pull out the negatives of not winning away at the big venues. I mean, I think that was something of a theme of that era. But it was actually constant progress. That's the way I saw it. Every year brought progress. And it was incremental, yes, but we just felt we were moving forward all of the while, and we were getting closer. You look at the league positions of the Moyes era. I mean, we were averaging, I don't know, sort of sixth for a while, weren't we? You know, we had fourth and, you know, often in the top 10. I think even with the limitations of Goodison in terms of its revenue raising and the kind of, you know, limitations that we had with the transfer budget, it was Moyes' ability to sort of sign those characters like Tim Cahill and Leighton Baines. And yeah, And there were big moments in that era, weren't there? Fiorentina and, just not nearly there, not quite there, but it kind of felt we would get there if he stayed. So I know I've got huge positivity. And I honestly, I cannot get my head around modern football. How those West Ham fans treated David Moyes is just blows my mind, to be honest with you. Because he was doing the same for them. And the disrespect, having won a trophy for them, and it just, yeah, I don't even begin to comprehend how that happens, but
And not just the fans either. I think the board showed them a lot of disregard, and not for the first time as well. They, maybe wishing that they'd kept them on for a little bit longer. You mentioned a few players there, Andy. So you said about Tim Cahill and Leighton Baines. Who would you say is your favourite player from this era that we're looking at, the good times era of post 1995 FA Cup?
oh, I can almost answer that just straight off the bat, Mikel Arteta.
Why?
To me, I always felt Everton, even in the really will help me say hate me saying this, but I always kind of ha hankered after a really classy ball playing central midfielder. And obviously I'm being unfair here. Obviously, we had the best, didn't we, in Reid and Bracewell, but Mikel to me just was like something I'd always wanted to see at Everton. I thought John Collins was going to be that, and he was a bit. And then Olivier Daucour was a bit of that, but more on the combative side. But Mikel, kind of, to me, was the first central midfielder at Goodison that I really thought you just like everything about this bloke, this player. Bit of grit, but class all the way through him, and classy off the pitch as well. Because I can't remember one stray comment really from him in all of his time. He sort of knuckled right down, didn't he? And kind of, bought into it. And yeah, that would be my answer. And I do still have a really sort of strong level of affection for him. He's obviously gone on a bit since his days with us, but I like to think that Everton Football Club played quite a big part in his sort of in his development. But he was certainly brilliant for us.
He was,
Yeah,
and
I
part of
do.
me hopes that he'll be back one day as well. But who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, possible. Maybe. I don't know. Wasn't Carlo checking out our new ground recently?
That
That seems hopeful, even by our standards, doesn't it? To bring Carlo back. But yeah, I think that, I mean, when I say it's a brilliant answer, subjective, but he's someone we've touched upon recently, Mikel. He's such a unique player, I think, in modern Everton history, particularly, like you say. And I think you're right in terms of Everton influence. I've had this thought recently. When you look at his Arsenal team and how they use set pieces, there's a little bit of me that thinks, well, there's a benefit of working under David Moyes, who really valued the set pieces. Yeah, I think he's a player we've really waxed lyrical about recently, isn't he, Kev?
Yeah, you realise what a good player he was again when you go back and watch some of the seasons that we've been watching for our podcast. But we are in the podcast as well, Andy, and you've said very kindly before we started that you've enjoyed a couple of episodes that you've listened to. We like to talk about some of the minutiae and the little details that maybe some people let go astray. And one of the big ones for us is Everton kits,
No,
as
though we've
you
had some
mentioned.
shockers though over the years, haven't we? I
We
mean,
have. We have, yeah. So
you're on the wrong subject with me here, because we always had this kind of weird shadowing going on, and all of, I kind of wait for the classic Everton football kit to come back, just without the nonsense on it and the whatever, and just that the kind of 1960s
yeah.
Kendall Ball Harvey kit. I mean, we had that. Almost, I think I can picture Kevin Campbell in that Kajan kit. That was close to it, wasn't it? That was like plain blue crew neck. But I'll be honest with you, most 9 times out of 10, the kit disappoints me. I wait every August for a classic
Yeah,
Everton football kit,
I know what you
with a
mean.
slightly Italian sort of like style
Yeah,
about it, and it never arrives.
the last one that I bought was 2014-15. It was the Umbro one with the, do you remember, with the navy granddad collar and the navy socks?
I do,
And it
yeah.
was, yeah, because that was a throwback, wasn't it? Like to the, what was it, the 1910s, the old kits back then.
It was, wasn't it, with the navy socks? And I think I think it's a really good point. It kind of ties into the point that
The
you made.
cream one you're talking about, the one we were wearing when we beat
No,
Chelsea away at
no,
Stamford.
I do love that one
No, we
as
love
well, though.
that
That,
kit. We
yeah.
both love that
Oh,
kit. That was
that
like
was
the
a good
home
kit.
kit with the granddad collar with a cap when we signed Lukaku.
Oh, sorry,
But
I got you. I got you.
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
But
that wasn't bad, was it? That was a good one as well. I like this current third one, the white one. I think that's okay. 'Cause I used to have one of my favorite kits as a kid was a white Hafnia one that had like a blue and yellow V-neck on it, and
yeah.
we didn't wear it. We very rarely wore it, but it was that was a great one. But you look back into the 90s, some of those Danker kits. I mean, God Almighty, what was going on there? I mean, there was I don't know that one. What was the one? It was like yellow, black, blue, kind of all sorts going on it, wasn't there?
Yeah,
And
it was a
just
96 to
terrible.
98 away kit. We've
Oh,
covered
God.
that because we did 97, 98. And funnily enough, it feels like it was a very Everton thing that they ended up on Watchdog because they had one-to-one plastered over. I don't know if you remember because Danko was sewn into the kit and they had one-to-one, like
Oh, I do remember
the
that. Yeah.
thick stick.
Oh, my
And when
God.
we were doing the
That's
research,
a
yeah,
very Everton story, isn't
it did. It
it?
came flooding back to me. I remember my granddad going, they're charging £40 for that. But I think it kind of goes back to your point here about modern football because we love kits. But one of the problems I think now is that you get one and it only lasts a season. In fact, we've brought out three kits every year virtually since 2002. And not only does it monetize the fans too much, I think it creates a churn, which actually kind of makes the quality less because you're bringing it out knowing, well, in 12 months' time, they're not going to wear this again. And it's only going to be a classic kit if they go and do something, which
Yeah.
unfortunately we haven't quite managed in the last 30 years.
No, you look, I say, at some of the classic Italian kits and things. In some ways you've got to go simple and timeless, haven't you? And that's the way to win this thing. Some of the sponsors as well. I mean, God, this current one, it's just, I remember one of my embarrassing experiences. I once did a run to Goodison. I was training to do the London Marathon for Everton in the community, and I did a run from home to the match. So I kind of ran all the way up the East Lancs, and I was coming into the fan zone. Don't normally go in there before games, but on this occasion, I was running in and then going straight up to say something with Graham. I think it was Graham White, and straight as I was coming on the stage, someone handed me a bottle of Chang. I was like, oh, anything but that. And all the Chang executives were on the stage. It was like, oh my God. But there we go. There was another bad. I think line up our sponsors, never mind the kits. That's a hall of shame, is it not?
Yeah, it's very
Angry
good.
Birds. What have we got here? I
Yeah,
mean,
we had
anyway.
Angry Birds on the sleeve. We had boxed recently. I mean, and we
We
do, I
had some good
think,
ones. NEC
recently.
was good. That didn't last very long, but yeah.
I think as well, one thing I wanted to ask you, Andy, kind of a story that I come across when I do a bit of research for this. I'm led to believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this did come from your own Twitter, so I won't hold you to it too much. But I'm led to believe you might have shared a car with an Everton manager in 1998 with Walter Smith.
I did, yeah. I love Walter. Walter, absolutely fantastic character. I persuaded him to speak at Labour Party conference in 1998, I think it was actually. I was working on the government's football task force at the time, and picked him up from Belfield and drove him up to Blackpool. And yeah, very fond memories of the journey up and back. So yeah. It's such a shame, isn't it, that Walter's no longer with us. What a great football man. And actually, I know he wasn't popular by the end, but bear in mind, he inherited a very poor team, if I remember rightly, and did bring some quality into it. He was a tough watch at times, but no, I think Walter's got his place in Everton history.
Yeah, he's a nice man, Walter, and
Definitely, yeah.
I think you're right. Like, he was brought in on with certain promises about how he'd be able to invest in the team, and that rug was kind of quickly pulled out from under him, wasn't it?
Was, yeah. But I think he signed the court, I think, from
Yeah,
memory.
did, yeah. He did, and Materazzi. So when he was given funds, I mean, you look at some of the signings like Kevin Campbell.
Yeah.
There were players that he did sign when he was given the opportunity, but it was kind of, it felt very evident, didn't it? Every time there's a new door, you think, oh, this seems really positive. There was just something around the corner, be it the NTL funding going or whatever. Yeah.
I've got a question for you two. So you're probably about 10 years younger than me, aren't you, both of you? Is that, am I about right?
Well, I'd have to ask you how old you are then, Andy, and I'm not, you know.
You feel rude saying that to a guest.
I'm in my mid-50s. So my question is...
Let's call it 15. We'll be a bit kinder and say 15.
So here's my question to you. Don't you wish you were 14 in 1984 like me?
Yeah. And that's
very simple answer.
I wish I was any age in 1984.
So you were still in primary school, weren't you? And I was just able to persuade my mum to let me get coaches all here, there and everywhere. So
oh no, we were born in 87.
Yeah.
So
oh lads.
Yeah, we blame ourselves. I started really following it in 94, 95 when we won the cup. So I'm thinking, well, we were born when the league was born, when we won the league last, and then I remember watching the FA Cup final thinking, oh, this is great. Yeah, I love all this. And it's been a terrible disappointment since a lot of the time. But
family often have cause to say, because we were in the family club. And in the summer of 84, we got the invite to go for a photo with the trophy. So we go as a family. You know, they got the FA Cup, FA Youth Cup and Charity Shield, I think, on the lineup. And so we're all there with the family. Next year, the invite comes through again, and this was Cup Winners Cup, League Champions, you know, League Division One, and I think it was Charity Shield again. And we always laugh about this because my mum was there. And, oh my, this isn't going to be every year, is it, that we've got to do? So no, there were years beyond that where we all used to say to her on a regular basis about how she moaned having to go and have our photo taken with the League Championship or the Cup Winners Cup.
Yeah, don't worry about
thinking that it would just be happening every year for the rest of our life. Yeah.
I think that's what Liam did. Liam's that rare phenomenon of the Everton glory hunter.
Oh no, I've ordered no glory. I don't think you can say that. I got into it in '94 after years of being pushed by my dad, and then he was like to my mum, I don't understand why he's so passionate about it. Mum's like, well, you've wanted this for years, you know, you got
you wanted them off the house.
Yeah, you wanted them off the house to go down to Goodison. There's still been some good times in that. And I think, you know, some of the things you touched on before, Andy, about the spirit of the club with the points of deduction. I actually think in the last few years, in particular when Everton have struggled, one of the positives has been the fan base. You know, I'm going to be blunt here, and you might disagree with me, but I suspect Everton probably would have been relegated in 2022 or 2023 if they didn't have the fans on side.
Oh, for sure. And you know what? I'll probably finish on this point. I'm as sentimental as anybody about Everton Football Club and about Goodison. I mean, you know, absolutely, completely, you know, feel that. But as we've gone through this journey, particularly in recent years, I'm now kind of coming to a mindset that says, right, you know what? It's right that Goodison's going. I hate that sounds unlike me, really. I wouldn't normally speak like that. I think we desperately need a completely new chapter. You know, a kind of whole new thing for everybody to kind of move, you know, almost like physically into a new space. Because I don't know, there's something about us that's pulled us back, hasn't it? The sort of like the expectation of the place, that, you know, the sometimes the mood of the place. I don't know. I just feel, you know, we're ready for a completely new era, aren't we? I think is what I will mourn the passing of the old. I definitely will. And, you know, each game is a bit of a trauma these days, not just because of what's on the pitch, but you're conscious of your surroundings and everything and everything about it. And the 1878, God bless them. I think they're doing an absolutely brilliant job and everyone should support them. I see them getting some stick at times. What's that about? They're working wonders, I think, in building that atmosphere that's carried us through the recent times. So total credit to them. However, I actually do really feel now, and I feel it for my own kids, you know, we need to move them all into a new era. And we need to, as well, I think, as older Evertonians, and I include you two in that category, we need to sort of maybe kind of embrace a new mindset as we go. You know, we're going to have to get a winning mindset and not a kind of catastrophe mindset. The minute we go one down, we're like, you know, it's... We just have to draw a line, I think, as Evertonians coming up. No, best group. We're going to be in the best ground in the league. You know, nowhere set better set up as a venue for football than that. You know, in the Premier League, we've just got to go into that now and just, I think, embrace everything about it. But embrace the joy of that and the positivity that that will bring. And that's the way I see it right now.
It's not even the catastrophic thinking. It's not even when we go a goal down. I said in our last episode, Andy, that when we went one up after 25 seconds in the cup final, I just said, I can't handle this. Like, I'm not going to be able to sit here with us winning this game too early.
I think we've got to work hard at getting a new mindset, haven't we? And I know it's been in some ways foisted on us because of the way they've been. But I just think, you know, new start for everybody. I think is the way I feel about it. Brilliant memories, you know. Nobody would swap any of it really, even the traumas of it all. But go into this new place with a kind of, you know, and go into the new year with a kind of new the rebirth of the club is on the horizon, isn't it? It's gonna be great. It's gonna be great. And we're gonna
It
win a
is, and we'll be
trophy
the
in that
first
new
team to
ground.
win the league at three grounds. We'll be the first team to do it. We did it at the ground, which we don't talk about that we left behind.
And for you 90s Evertonians, we might even, I don't know, win something for you. And I feel that we're, you know, we're hoarding all those trophy memories, aren't we? My 70s generation. But I think God Almighty, I yearn for that more than anything, to see this generation of young Evertonians in their teenage years, 20s, 30s. What a trophy would mean for them. It's just like off the scale, isn't it? And I include my own son in that. So, but it's absolutely coming.